Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. There's been a little revamping of the website, a little tweaking here and there, nothing major, but still all of the great stuff that you're looking for, like the guests, the links to their websites, and we'll be giving you the link to our guest website shortly, so we hope that you will avail yourself of the information they have to offer, and it's great to be with you here in the midst of summertime here on the Central Coast here in Santa Barbara, California, where I happen to reside. Have been residing now for, I cannot believe it's been 10 years. It's just unbelievable. But it's been a good 10 years all in all, and we've made some good friends, made some good acquaintances as well, including our guest. And he's been on before. It's great to have him back with us. Rhys Thomas is the author of Discover Your Purpose, How to Use the 5 Life Purpose Profile to Unlock Your Hidden Potential and Live the Life You Were Meant to Live. Rhys, welcome to the program. Welcome back. It's good to have you back again.
Thank you, Richard. Pleasure.
Quite honestly, it's rather extraordinary. We are constantly talking about our life's purpose. And if you recall, and I think I did ask this question of you back when we had you on before, I usually end my interviews with my guests with 3 basic questions. And one of them just happens to be, what is your life purpose? I'm going to ask you that particular question up front here. What is your life purpose, Rhys Thomas?
Well, my life purpose is to share my creative dream. This sort of like I'm a person, and we'll talk about this when we're talking about what I teach at my institute. I run an energy medicine school, and that sort of is my purpose in the external. So the easy way to tell what someone is, you know, what their life purpose is, what my life purpose is that I'm a teacher. So truly deep inside, I'm a teacher. But what kind of teacher I am, my deepest purpose is to share sort of mystery school kind of ideas, these things that come to all of us, these epiphanies that we get, these sort of awarenesses that, oh my gosh, there's something bigger, there's something more. And we have these moments when we're doing yoga or we're doing meditation or something huge happens in our lives, and we have a dream or something happens, and we wake up to this broader reality that we're really within, that our normal sort of limited thinking of get here and get there and be on time and you know, make so much money and you know, all of the check boxes that we have in our lives all fall away, and we have these moments of awakening, and so my purpose is to give people as a teacher a context for why we have the epiphanies we have, why we have these inner callings that we have that nobody else seems to have the same one that we do, or that there's certain things like I said, I'm a teacher, but I'm more of a spiritual taskmaster teacher than I am someone who learns a lot of facts and figures and then teaches those to other people. I'm a bit of a make it up as you go along type of person, because that's how life is. You know, the mastery of life. I love to teach mastery. And that level of mastery is every moment in your life an awakening, an epiphany, or is every moment in your life something that you are an expert at and know how you're going to feel when it happens? I'm all about waking people up to their amazing lives that are happening in each moment. So I think that would be my life purpose, and that is one of the 5 life purpose profiles, which is what we call a creative idealist.
So that in a nutshell,
yeah,
is your life's purpose. No, that's all right. We've got plenty of time. There's no worry there. And what's interesting too is that the way you describe this, actually one phrase comes to mind that you didn't use, and that was in reference to the ancient wisdom teachings, as I call them, and that encompasses not only what is available here in this material world, both in oral as well as written tradition. But it also encompasses that which is in the etheric, if you will, or spiritual world. Some might even refer, in one context, to, say, the Akashic Records. Because we're not if I'm hearing you correctly, we're not just talking about this material world in terms of my life's purpose is to be a construction worker, a teacher, a sanitation engineer, a scientist, a politician, and the list goes on. I mean, there are so many different possibilities, which has always fascinated me when I was working in religious broadcasting. And of course, you know, I can go pretty much anywhere I want, and I can try a myriad of different kinds of foods from around the world. There are all kinds of different beverages, water from that point on to just about anything you'd want to consume. There are so many different educational processes that I could pursue. So many different lifestyles, if you will, in terms of I could live in Alaska. You've seen some of those programs, I'm sure, where these people are living a sustenance life, if you will. But then when it came to my spiritual life, there was only one way. And at that moment, I said, no, that's inconsistent. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense to me. So when we start talking about all of these different possibilities, all of these different sources, if you will, to guide us and lead us through. And you've sort of, in a manner of speaking, you've sort of codified it down into these five life purpose profiles. 364 pages.
That was sliced out of about 1,500 pages of manuscript. Because it's an amazingly deep concept, and I think, you know, what you're alluding to in what you were saying is it's important for your listeners to understand that there are lots of life purpose sort of profiling systems and numerology and Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and DISC and they're very much based on behavior, on sort of like they're behavioral based, and I really, the work that I do, I wrote this book based on the energy medicine work that I did in understanding the seven chakras, the five energies, the five spiritual energy centers, and understanding that your body and your physical life purpose in the world is one manifestation of that entirety, but it is not separate from that. And so, you know, one of the things that I always remind people of when they come into the program is that one of the worst things that we've taught our children is that they can become anything they want to become. But the truth is, like you were just saying, I could live here, I could live there, I could live anywhere. Mm-hmm. I could take any job, I could do anything I would like to do. I want to be president, I want to go for that. But the truth is that. There is only one thing that we're all here to do, and it's to be this deeper soul self and be called into the world with that as sort of like the foundational rock of who you are. And Jung called it the primary archetype. You have to understand your primary archetype. He called it the self, but he didn't really delineate it into these five qualities which we know of as sort of these types of people. Mm-hmm. that Alexander Lohan and Wilhelm Reich did, who were also contemporaries of Jung, and they all sort of took different tacks. They all sort of agreed that Freud was the crazy one, but of course our culture took Freud's work as the Bible, and the other guys were sort of crazy. But the idea of having a life purpose that, let's say, since we come in, each of us, with a unique way we're going to, like, for instance, I said I was a teacher. The way I'm a teacher is different than any other teacher I've ever met, and that's true for all great teachers or politicians or lawyers or, you know, business owners. The way they run their business, if it's true to their core self, is a very effective, transformational, inspiring business in the world.
Hmm.
And so for each person to understand that there's this core quality within them that then they're here to express in a very unique way, it gives them a foundation for their uniqueness rather than lumping themselves into, as in many of the other profiling programs, some sort of like, oh, well, I'm a this or I'm a that, and that means I do this. And, mm-hmm. and that sort of reinforces the way you think rather than reinforces this ability to awaken to a greater quality within you. So if we were all children and came into the world and our parents actually were able to see that they have no idea who we are, they have no concept of what we're really here to do other than that they shared some genetic material with us and have given us a, sort of like an energetic starting point. And they said, we don't know who you are, whether you're a boy or a girl, whether you should behave one way or the other. What, we don't know any of that stuff, but we're going to help you start investigating that right now and figure out who this amazing person is inside of you that's different, totally different than us, and won't want to be our religion, and won't want to be in the same jobs we're in. Well, you likely won't want to do any of that stuff, mm-hmm. but we're going to help you find that. By the time we were 30 or 40, we'd be all masters, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, they tell us that we should be like them, and you're a boy or a girl. You're supposed to be, you know, wearing blue or this or that. Society says this, and you need to start conforming to what we think you should be if you're going to be a successful person and have a life purpose in life. And then when we get to our 30s and 40s, we realize that we have no idea who we are, and we have to start at that point all over again. So my goal with doing this is one, to help all the people who were taught that they were somebody that they weren't and then tried to be somebody that they weren't, like I did throughout my life, and the earlier on, that they actually have this amazing quality within them, and that quality is something that they have to discover and call forward every day through their feelings, not through sort of an analysis of who they are.
You know, and it's interesting too. One of the attributes that you mentioned that they tell us, how to conform is that, you know, you're a boy, you're a girl. Well, and that's rather
right.
interesting in this day and age now, when you have this transgender issue going on. And I have no dog in this fight either way. My concern is that people are happy with who they are, and if you're not happy, and you're not fulfilled in whatever other criterion you want to use as the gender that you came into this world as. And by the way, if I'm remembering biology correctly, Rice.
Yeah.
If I remember my biology, when the sperm and the egg come together and they start to develop and the cells start to split and create the embryo, my understanding is that initially every single human being who's ever come into this world started out as a female. And it wasn't until like the second or third or fourth or fifth week or what have you, that then either another, what was it, another Y chromosome was dropped or an X chromosome was dropped, so to speak.
Right.
That determined your physical gender. But that we all started out as female. That there was a point from the joining of those two cells that it was all Y.
Right.
And so I sit here going, why are people so freaked out when simple biology tells us that if the natural order of things didn't take place and that X didn't drop, we'd all be female? Of course, I don't know how the heck the species would continue. We'd have to find another way to procreate.
Right.
But I just find that interesting that people are having so much difficulty with those who are struggling with the gender that they were born into that they're uncomfortable with.
Right.
You know, but
energetically, male and female, I mean, if you look at all of the dimensions of our level of consciousness, they're chakras, there's seven mm-hmm. totally different dimensions.
Right.
The physical dimension, the emotional dimension, the dimension of action, the dimension of relationship, the dimension of communication and vibration, the dimension of thought,
mm-hmm.
the dimension of spirituality, and then there's dimensions of physical universal purpose, and then spiritual contracts, and then the sort of the gestalt, aha, the awakening, you know, that's another level of consciousness that we have. And then we have soul dimensions as well. And to say that this one dimension of who we are, which is form,
mm-hmm.
somehow then negates or defines all of the other levels. What we teach energetically is that the right half of your body is masculine, and the left half of your body is feminine. So anything that's going on in your left half of your body has to do with your receptive, more feminine. You know, if you've got injuries over there, or illnesses that affect the left half of the body, those are related to the more in the feminine. If you've got pain or something on the right half of your body, you're chronically having knee issues on that side, or elbow problems, or headaches on that side, or things like that. That represents the masculine side. So each of us are in our lifetime having, we're born with an energy system that is constantly trying to balance between the masculine and the feminine. Mm. And so recognizing that once again, so when we talk about these five profiles that I teach in Discover Your Purpose, and we know that there are literally five almost species of people on the planet. There are people that are the super thinkers, creative and artistic and out of their, not paying attention very often to what's happening in the world, and very often anxiety about the world.
Right.
And that's and we know those people, and they're tall and thin, and their bodies, remember, the body is part of the entire energy system. So the body has to go along with that. So your body channels energy in a very specific way for the life purpose, for the energy system.
Mm.
This is where I really differ from all the others, because all the others, you can have any body type. As long as you behave a certain way, you can be that quality,
yeah.
A number 7 or a number 3, in the Enneagram,
right.
or whichever the Myers-Briggs, numbers you come up as, letters you come up as. But the truth is that you have a very specific body for your purpose, because if I'm going to be someone who channels energy up to my brain very quickly, I need to be very thin and move energy from the ground up very quickly, whereas I'm really wide and strong like a team player or a charismatic leader, where I'm really sort of like I'm a force that holds the ground, I'm not going to be that much up in my head and be able to be as creative as I can be. So we have the creative idealist, and then we have what we call the emotional intelligence specialists, who are this very heart-centered people, and they are the deepest, loving, most gentle, most sensitive and emotional people on the planet, and they are never violent. They are always gentle and caring, but often overwhelmed by life because they're so sensitive. And without getting into the others, I can just compare those two. The others are the team players, who are very warm and loving, the knowledgeable achievers, who are very, they have lots of letters behind their name. They're very successful mm-hmm. in normal schooling. And by the way, our schooling, the schooling in our country is really only for knowledgeable achievers. If you have the knowledgeable achiever profile, you will love school. If you don't have the knowledgeable achiever profile, you will likely not like school very much.
Now,
and so that means that our school is really only designed to support about 20% of the people on the planet.
Wow.
Or in our culture, and probably in all cultures, because it teaches you. If you can't, make a good grade and do things and organize and structure and do homework, you're not a successful person.
You're
not going to be a good person in the world. And then the final ones are the leaders, who have everything. They're high energy. They can be up. They can be down. They can be volatile. They can be warriors. They have all sorts of things, but they're very inspirational, and they are change makers in the world.
Mm.
But if we just go back to the first two, we're talking about, masculine and feminine. Those first two tend to be the creative idealist. Sort of the thinker, high thinkers, and creative people, tend to be sort of more out of their body and more in sort of the masculine thinking process. Whereas the feelers, whether they're men or women, will tend to be much more in the feminine side of the world. So they will naturally find that they are deep, sensitive people, whether they're men or women. And so there's no gender relation beyond the fact that I came in as a man. Men that come in as people come in with a masculine body, because of course, like you said, how are we going to continue the species if we don't have male and female?
Mm-hmm.
But because we're these conscious beings, we also have a deeper purpose, and this deeper purpose goes along with the type of body we have and the types of things that we have. And so there are men that are very soft and gentle, who are much more feminine than many of their of the women who come into the world, who have the stronger qualities or the thinking qualities or the higher sort of masculine, rigid, kind of structured qualities. So all that, you know, sort of falls apart when you go beyond the first chakra.
Mm-hmm.
Really, all masculine, you know, the only place men and women count is at the first chakra. So we're talking a tiny percentage of our life purpose is whether we're a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else comes in all of the other areas of your life.
And one other thing to keep in mind, folks, is that, yes, there are these five personality profiles, but you find your primary profile, but you may very well, as I did, as I'm reading through these, realize, well, yeah, but I have character attributes of all five of these. So how
yes.
can I be, quote unquote, pigeonholed into just one? But there is a primary one there. After you've gone through the process of, you know, doing the testing, you find out which one you're predominantly in, and
yep.
then you're going to find, just like anything else. And I always found it interesting too when I have this beautiful grand niece, my parents' great granddaughter, which is an amazing thing. Four generations are living today in my family, and I often wondered in terms of passing on traits, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritual traits to our offspring, because most of the time, most people, they look at an infant and say, oh, he's got Uncle Bill's eyes, and he's got Aunt Fran's chin, and on and on and on. And as then they start to grow one and two and three, and they start exhibiting personality traits that, oh my gosh, he's got so-and-so. Matter of fact, my mother says that my grandniece Lilia apparently exhibits the energy and exuberance and the bouncing off the walls that I did when I was a kid. So I'm, you know, and, but what struck me so strangely was that people couldn't understand that it doesn't stop there, that we pass on not just the physical, mental, and emotional, but I honestly do believe that even we pass on certain spiritual traits to our offspring.
Absolutely.
You know, and by the way, one other thing too, you know, we talk about life purpose and we talk about trying to find it. I had the great pleasure a year ago of interviewing my parents. Now, they're in their mid-80s now, and they're alive and well and doing great. They just celebrated their 60th anniversary back in June.
Wow, congratulations.
And
that bodes well for you.
Well, I'm hoping. Matter of fact, I was listening to an audio tape of a birthday celebration for my great-grandmother back in 1989. That was back in the good old days, and I was listening to her talking. I was asking her questions, and she was fairly lucid and was able to help, and I had other relatives sitting around who kind of filled in the little gaps that she had left. We had four generations living at that point in time. It was fascinating. But here's the thing about my parents, that when we talk about life purpose, I would ask them, because this statement was made to me quite often, that my parents had six children. I'm one of the middle males, two older sisters, two younger sisters, a younger brother. And it's often been said to me, oh boy, your folks sacrificed a lot for you guys, you know, to raise you and everything. So I put that question to them. I said, did you guys sacrifice anything? And they said, well, no. This was what we wanted to do. We wanted a large family. As a matter of fact, they talked about when they first met and the conversations they had long before they ever married. My mom wanted to have a big family. And fortunately, my dad did, too. And it was like, you know, so here's what's interesting. When you talk about life purpose, maybe my life as an individual, my life purpose may not be to be president of the United States or a major author who's going to bring great ideas to the public or any of these other grand concepts that we might have. Like what you hear, you know, when someone does a past life regression and, you know, they were these great people in through history, maybe.
Right.
And this is the way I started thinking about this as you were going through this process. The thought occurred to me, my parents' life purpose as a couple, as a unified energetic dynamic, was not to attain any of those lofty goals. It was to bring the six of us into this world to live out our life's purpose. Now,
that may not be there. Go ahead. So if we're going to bring this into the context of the profile,
mm-hmm.
What we choose to do is often sort of secondary to how we do it. So one of your parents was the one that had the real sort of power,
mm-hmm.
and that one was probably the charismatic leader. And one of your parents likely had the team player, and now they maybe met in both of those, and certainly there had to be some creative drive in your parents as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the key with the life purpose isn't what they choose to do, because they were brought up in a time where the values were large families are great, especially if they were Catholic or they were, you know, there's this sense of family being really important. Now, they can't have that family being important unless they already have some sort of value in this is how we want to make our place in the world with the family and strong, and we want and so some people have a big family because they want to make sure that their children are always supported and have each other to lean on,
mm-hmm.
and that would come from the charismatic leader. Some will have the value of a big family because I just love people and I love and we should have a big family because I love to get together and we love to do the parties and we love to, you know, and God, everybody should have friends their whole lifetime. And then there will be other people that say that would be the team player. And then if the knowledgeable achiever were doing this, the knowledgeable achiever would be doing it because it's, you know, there's a real good reason to have a big family because it's healthier and statistics say that people that grow up in larger families do better in the world, have more support, feel happier, mm-hmm. you know, and they'll be doing it for those types of reasons. So there's a reason that they do what they do. And if the emotional intelligence specialist say wants to have a large family, it's because it's the most loving thing you can do is to have a big family, and you always want to do that. And creative idealists would never do it.
Mm.
So when you look at it, when you're really looking deeper into the spiritual element of it, the lower chakra world of survival and having a family and can you afford it and is this the right thing to do and does culture support this, you know, all of those things are important at the very basic level. But then who you bring that, just like the job you choose, there are lots of people who do radio shows. There's lots of people that run schools or do spiritual work. There are lots of people that are out there in law and this. But do you bring this quality with you? And the truth is that what you inherit from your parents are those deeper qualities. And so if one of your parents was a leader and one was very creative or one was a very much of an achiever and an organized person, the other one was more caretaking and loving, you have those qualities as a blend. And that's what's interesting is that you were saying, well, we have these secondary qualities, and we do. You will have picked one of your parents' primary qualities as your sort of like, not picked it, but it picks you,
mm-hmm.
As the energy you work on in your life. And that has really, that primary thing you have to figure out, I just finished a big live event this past weekend where we help people really sort of make a decision as to how they're going to transform their lives, how they're going to be happy in their lives, which is really the goal of life. As the Dalai Lama said, the goal of life is to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we make sure that we're happy? Well, we have to make sure that what we're doing serves our deeper spiritual calling, our deeper spiritual mission. And people really have three major issues. They're either, you know, in their midlife. As we said, we finally wake up in our midlife and say, God, there's got to be something more. And that begins the spiritual calling, which is always from discontent. There's a level of discontent. And what we're discontent with is we're either getting a divorce or having relationship issues. We don't like our career and really wish we were doing something that were more valuable in the world, or we were sharing more, we were able to make a bigger difference in people's lives. Or we have health issues. And often people come in to these to these large. I had 200 people in the room this past weekend, and they'll come in with all three. And almost always illness is and relationship issues or inability to decide what work you want to actually do, or feel like the work you're doing may not be the right work for you, or the relationship you're in, this may not be the right relationship. It's because you don't know who you are. And then illness, what I've found, because I'm in energy medicine school, is always a factor of not knowing who you are. So it's imperative to learn this quality within you as your primary quality, because that's what your chakras run on, all of your past lives. If you'll notice, as you mentioned past lives, if you go back to past lives, realize that they all had this theme, this soul theme, this quality, because these are soul qualities we're talking about. But what will also come in there is that you will choose your parents. All children choose their parents. Parents don't choose children. Your parents didn't choose to have you six children. You six children decided to go with them and support them in their dream of having six children.
Right.
And you chose them because they were going to give you exactly the energies you needed to live your purpose. So you're discovering what your purpose is. One, helps you sort of feel better, get the better career, know what kind of relationships you'll thrive in and which ones you are never going to thrive in, and why you got the divorce to begin with. And that element brings in this other element, which you're going to see your parents from a completely different way. You're going to appreciate them more. You're going to see your children differently. You're going to see all the people that have come to you in your life differently as well. And realize that, oh my gosh, these people are all here because of this quality within me, and that's my real law of attraction. That's my real magnetism, and that's really why I do what I do, is to help people wake up to the fact that what's happening in your life right now, this is really your life. This is it. There's no sort of trial run on life. You're getting it right now. Understanding it means it can only come from understanding yourself at a deep level and knowing why this is all happening.
We're going to come back and continue our conversation with Reese Thomas. And you can go to reesethomasinstitute.com to find out more. Discover Your Purpose is the title of the book. It's the work that he's involved in right now, and we encourage you to stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much. It's great, again, that you have chosen to stay with us here on the program. I'm not going anywhere, I can tell you that right now, because this to me is fascinating, especially with what you just shared, Reese, as far as the whole aspect of these characteristics, in the profile. And I'm curious about one other thing in that regard. Now, just to give you a point of reference here, I have a dear friend who is a Vedic astrologer. And, of course, you know, we've talked about all these different modalities for understanding who and what we are and why we are and so on and so forth, and we can get all this guidance. And what I found so fascinating is in our conversations was the fact that if I could provide him with the birthplace, time, and date of not just a person, but even countries, civilizations, et cetera, you know, boom, there's a chart. So I'm curious as to whether or not these five personality profiles can be attributed to, let's just say for the sake of argument, the United States of America, the 50 contiguous, well, not quite contiguous, but the 50 states that comprise this country and so on and so forth, as far as understanding our role in the global world versus some of these other countries in Europe or Asia or Africa, et cetera, et cetera. Have you ever gone down that particular road?
Oh, I go down. Listen, there's no road I don't go down. So yeah, I go way down there. And Deepak Chopra tells a great story about the Jyotish, which is like the ultimate Vedic astrologers. And he said, if you're actually a Jyotish astrologer, and you walk into their business, and they don't hand you your chart as you walk in because they knew you were going to be there, they don't know what they're doing.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was a great story.
That's kind of like a psychic who...
I don't
who,
know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
But think about it more this way. As we were talking also about, you know, the cells deciding these potential protoplasmic cells that decide whether they're going to be male or female, or you know, any of that sort of stuff. Let's take it down to the much deeper level, to where we are literally being born at, from the quantum level. We are being birthed from the quantum level at the same moment. This universe is being reborn in each moment. If you break it all the way down to the quantum level, where everything's just pure potential, and out of the quantum level come these things called particles, which are the quantum physicists have found that there's these energies that aren't really energies, but they don't know what to, they're sort of like the intention. And so this intention is coming into, the intention is to create matter, and the matter then creates atoms of light and particles, and the light creates more atoms and molecules and people and stars and universes. And in each split second, each trillionth of a second, the universe is being born brand new in every second from this quantum realm. Okay, so they've discovered that we are literally being born. So where you're born, who you're born to, when you're born, all of the astrology, if you really get beyond just sort of like, oh, I'm an Aries, or I'm a Capricorn, or I'm that kind of stuff, the really deep understanding of it is that if you understand that your whole life can be understood in just understanding the moment of your birth, you have to understand that in each moment you're being born brand new, just like the universe is. And you can literally have a brand new star chart every moment of every day, and that's called your life. And when you look at your life and you look at the stars that are circling around you that look like people, and you look at the universe that's coming around you that look like buildings and cars and the town or the city you live in, and realize that these are all elements of the universe putting you here right now, and your soul deciding that this is, you know, because the souls are the quantum field is the soul that is intending your purpose, your life, to be right here, right now. And so the physical life purpose, so there's a point in our body which the martial artists train called the Dantian, and that point is this point in the lower belly, and that point literally is birthing you in the universe. The universe and you are one thing. That's why the martial arts train that, because in a martial arts fight with deadly weapons, you don't have time to be thinking, oh, he's stabbing at me, I wish he weren't doing that. You have to literally be one with the movement, so that you're not sort of taking things personally that they're trying to kill you, but you are actually able to stay totally connected to the world and universe and your place in it. And if your place in it is to stay alive, then you will move in a certain way and will counter whatever's happening. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you the body, the intelligence, the nervous system, the place in the world. And each moment we live, we have everything we'll ever need to live our life purpose.
Ooh, I like
from
that.
From that one point.
I like that.
And so the truth is that yes, we are literally birthing each moment. The key then is to know the other point on that same energy field, which is called the Hara line, which is up in the high thymus, which are your contracts for how you're supposed to do this in a lifetime. And so that's why I also teach in the school. We teach a lot about archetypes. So my understanding that I'm this teacher, but my teacher is I call it the professor of the Reese method, because ever since I was a little kid, I loved to teach. I had two teacher parents. I chose them because I was going to be a teacher in the world, and they were excellent teachers, both of them, and they both liked to teach what they like to teach. And I sort of was like, well, I like the same thing. I like mm-hmm. teaching what I like to teach. Mm-hmm. I don't like to teach what everybody else teaches. I like to make it up, and I'll take what everybody else does, and then I'll synthesize it into something brand new, and that's what I do. And so I call myself the professor of the Reese method rather than a teacher.
Yeah.
And that's my sort of my archetype. But each of us need to find that awareness that we're really waking up in each moment to deeper and deeper gifts within ourselves. And these five profiles, knowing whether you're creative, so my creative idealist is a natural teacher in the way I like to teach. If you're a charismatic leader, you know, and having really wanting to share your message, having a radio show like you have, I mean, really, really having that ability to inspire people with your voice. I have some of that. That's definitely one of my secondary qualities. As you were saying, there are other qualities within us, but they all serve my creative nature, my
right.
creative idealist nature.
Right. You know, you talk about being a teacher. I've had the great privilege for a short period of time back in the late 80s, early 90s to be a teacher myself of that which I am involved in this industry, the broadcast industry, in a couple of different schools. And I got to tell you, I just had a blast with that. I remember they told me that, yeah, we have this class and we want you to come teach on this specific attribute of broadcasting. I think one was production, you know, and of course we're into the computer age, so we want you to teach, you know, editing in digital format and so forth. And so I didn't go in with a stack of papers or a syllabus or a checklist of an outline of what I was going to cover. And I approached it the same way that I approach every single interview, specifically when I talk with the guests who are nervous and what have you. I'm not going to ask you anything about what you don't know. So as a teacher, I'm not going to teach you anything that I don't know. So why do I need notes? I'm going to teach you straight from my head and heart as far as the intricacies and the aspects and so on and so forth. And they said, and it's each class is an hour and 15 minutes. And there is no break. And I thought, wow, that's a long time. And I remember the first class I taught, it went through like a flash. I couldn't believe how fast it went. But I have to say that when we're talking about life purpose, again, I think the secondary aspect for me is teacher. And I do enjoy that. As a matter of fact, to the extent that I took this perspective early in my career, in terms of broadcasting, I don't want to hold on to all of the information and the techniques and all this stuff. I don't want to withhold it from anybody, because if I don't teach other people how to do what I'm doing, I don't get to move on.
Right.
And I know that there are some people who are so paranoid, they're afraid that they will lose their power, their position, et cetera, if they share what they know with the people around them who need to know the same things, basically, in order to be able to grow and to learn and to progress. But one of the things that I found in my life, and I don't know about you, Reese, but I have been able to say to this day that I have been in the right place at the right time throughout my short little 56 years. And there has never been a plan. There has never been any concept. Matter of fact, it was really funny. I didn't even think about this from eighth grade. You know how you have to write that what I want to be when I grow up kind of thing? A little report, right?
Yeah.
And now I have a photograph that was taken when I went to in Phoenix, a local TV station, to interview one of the participants in a kids show. It was called the Wallace and Ladmo Show back in Phoenix, one of the longest running kids shows on television. And I went to interview one of the cast members who was also a radio personality. And I had this cassette recorder, and I went in there and I talked with him. But I was in eighth grade, so what? It had to have been I was maybe 12, because I graduated in 72 from grade school, and I wrote a paper on being, in broadcasting, in radio, right? And I completely forgot about all of that all through high school. There was no thought whatsoever as to, what am I going to do with my life after I get out of high school? Do I go to college? Da, da, da. And it wasn't until I got into junior college that doors started to open up just naturally. And then that incident back in eighth grade flashed back in my mind. Oh, my God. I knew when I was 12, even though I'd been playing with equipment and doing this kind of stuff earlier than that, I hadn't put things together. And all of a sudden, it just kind of clicked. So I'm curious as to a person who finds themselves, you know, in one of these profiles, life purpose profiles, they're able to identify the primary one. Do you find that in some instances, I mean, we've already described where people, they've been in jobs, you know, for a long time, decades even, because, well, this is what our family does, or great grandpa did this and grandpa did this and my dad did this, so I do this. It's just what's,
this is what men do.
Exactly. And you remember in 2008 when we had the big economic downturn and hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of people were laid off in this country, right? They were let go, right? And the first thought that came to me was, I wonder what percentage of those people really hated their jobs and that this was actually a godsend because now they had the opportunity to pursue. Now, I understand what you're saying about your life's purpose is not what you do, but they could maybe get on track for the first time in their lives and be happy.
And I would take the side that when you're living in survival, doing a job that's just making the bills and you're grinding away and that job disappears, and the rug gets pulled out from under you, that for many of those people actually became the beginning of looking inward.
Mm.
So it wasn't just a matter of finding the right job. It's that they actually had time, many of these people, and to look inward, and we don't know ultimately what that now has triggered, the domino effect that has, because there are many of those people that had to look inward and talk to a therapist and do things they would have never done other than that, or find a way to de-stress themselves from this panic of survival, of losing their survival, and then deciding, well, what would I, if I could make a different choice going forward, what would I do? And so a percentage of them have made choices to follow more what they would have wanted as a child. And so I teach in the book, one of the things, not only do we have a profile assessment in the book, but we also have an exercise called The Secret Place. And when you discover your secret place as a child, like you had said, when you were in eighth grade, but I mean, really even much earlier than that, mm-hmm. When you're in first or second grade, or even before going to school, 6, 7 years old, there was a place that you, in a way that you like to play, you like to visualize, you like to imagine yourself in certain ways. And you enjoyed certain things just like that. You felt like one with the universe. It was, there wasn't like I'm doing this and I'm a good person. It's just the way you played. Knowing how to be happy, is really the essence of what you need to then bring to everything that you do. I tell my clients and students that once you discover what your secret place was, your mission in life, your purpose in life is to make all of your life your secret place.
Mm-hmm.
Because in your secret place, mm-hmm. you're not a boy or a girl, you're not a man or a woman, you're nothing that can be labeled. You are a force. You are this excited, passionate, enthusiastic, brilliant, creative, happy, I don't know how many, what else to describe it, deep, sort of connected, all of these feelings that we have when we are loving life. We just can't wait. And when we're children, we have moments where, and places where we allowed ourselves to be that, even though we'd maybe come back in the house and parents say, sit down and do your homework and be quiet, or you go to school and they told you basically the same thing. And we were taught, and we were sort of domesticated, that the quality of exuberance for life was sort of domesticated out of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was told, well, you can, focus that on your sports, become a good athlete, but you have to win. You have to, all these silly things that a child would never think of, that adults then teach us how to be better adults. It's really a silly thing. Another fun concept that I teach is that becoming an adult is the most childish thing we can do.
Yeah, and I like the way that's put. a childish thing.
Now, it's a childish thing because because children are the only ones who look at adults like they're special.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And like they're somehow gods to them, which they are. To a child, a person comes in and can flick on the lights and feed them food or, you know, put them up to the breast and have milk come out of it or, or create miracles. I mean, adults were gods to children. And so then, of course, the adults say, well, you're a child and we're adults, and someday you'll grow up to be an adult, too. And the child's like, oh, I can't wait to become an adult. Not knowing that their parents were complete idiots or clueless about what they were doing in their lives or their life purpose or anything about themselves whatsoever. They just had an authority position, and we've looked at authority position like that's an adult. The truth is that the child comes in to reawaken the unconscious adults. They were the only intelligent ones in the family. And it shouldn't be the adults domesticating the children to become adults. It should be the other way around. And when you do your profile, when you find out who you are, when you find your secret place, you realize that this childlike energy, which we call the child archetype, is the essence within you, the energy within you that is what you have to work with to live your life purpose. Because your life purpose is something. For instance, I just did this big event this past weekend. There's a million moving parts, hundreds of people, 50 staff, all amazing things. And it is exhausting for me to get ready for that event because I'm not good at that stuff. But when those lights go on and I get up on stage and I start sharing what I'm doing, at the end of the 2 days, it was like I had gone on a spa weekend for a month. Mm. And I had that much energy because that's my purpose. That's what I'm here to do in the world.
Yeah.
And when you are the child again or exuberant again about your life, you'll know your life purpose because you feel great and have tons of energy. And then you'll also notice things that you have to do because, well, that lets me do my life purpose that aren't really part of your, in your wheelhouse. But you learn how to do them and you balance back and forth between the two. But if all of your life is doing what you have to do, and it's exhausting you, that's where you really need these profiles. That's where you really need to step in there, or whether it's the relationship you're in or your health. These things are direct indicators that you need to find that deeper purpose within yourself.
On average, how long will it take for someone to go through do the work to find their profile?
I mean, you read my book. That book is very, I mean, you've read it. Mm-hmm. You've read it. And mm-hmm. I mean, you will be able to start working on your profile just as by getting through the book. Within a week, you can begin the process of embodying and holding your energy better, and then more importantly, seeing the other people in your life that you thought were aliens and realizing they're not aliens. They're just not the same profile as I am.
Right.
I could never understand why they thought that way, why they behaved that way. Now I'm really understanding them better. You have more compassion for them. You'll have more compassion for yourself. That begins immediately. Mm-hmm. I run a school, a 3-year training, which we meet 5 weekends a year, and they read my book, but they also read a whole array of other books as well, which train you in how to maintain the energy of this exuberance for life, first for yourself, then in your relationships, and then out in the world in your business, in the 3-year training, in the 3-module training. And it does take time to really integrate this in all areas of your life. But if you read my book and take the assessment, and if you go on Reese, if you go actually to discoveryourpurposebook.com and buy the book there, there's a video that goes along with it. There's other sort of products that I have that go along that can teach you more about how to do this. You just on a course of self-study, you can change your life within months in a reasonable, without killing yourself.
Yeah.
You can start changing your life just by shifting the way you see yourself and other people.
And I think that when someone starts taking a look at, how long is this going to take? Of course, we're always looking for the quick fix. There isn't one. And to take a look at, okay, well, how long have you been unhappy? How many decades have you been unsatisfied in your life? Well, what's a month? What's 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks? By comparison, it's nothing.
Right.
And so to go into that direction and to seek out and find and discover your purpose, that's the title of the book, How to Use the 5 Life Purpose Profiles to Unlock Your Hidden Potential. And Live the life you were meant to live. Now, again, we go back to what you said at the beginning of the program. This is not about finding your career and so forth. And as I said before, I'm fortunate that I can say that I've been in the right place at the right time. What I have been doing for the nearly 40 years, if not longer in other areas, it's my vocation. It's what I love to do. And jokingly, I say to people, and maybe it's not so jokingly, and hopefully it's when I'm 100 or more, they will have to peel my cold, dead carcass off of the console because that's where I'm going to make my departure. Because this, for me, is such a blast. I mean, it's where else?
And that is truly a blessing.
Yeah. And you know, where and else?
It is, but I would say, mm-hmm. I would say that it is rare.
Mm-hmm.
In our world, it is rare that people find that level of sort of like, that's what I'm here to do. I totally get it. Because so many of us are domesticated by our parents and culture to see ourselves as what we should be, and then we become what we should be, and then we don't really feel who we are. And so so if you had really been domesticated hard by your parents, not to be able to be whoever you were, not just to be able to be a fun kid who plays and that and find something fun to do in your life, you know, you would have said, well, no, I got to be a lawyer because that's where you got to make the money, or mm-hmm. I have to be a doctor because my mom will only love me if I'm a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have looked at radio work, and you would have looked at that as sort of like, well, you know, that's not really, you know, what a guy should be doing. I should be running a construction company. I should be doing whatever it is that you were brought up with. But somehow your parents were there, and you had enough soul in you to also be able to say, you know what, I've got this.
Yeah.
And it's not that everybody has that much soul in them to be able to know what they're really here to do. The problem is that they had to trade that soul, that self-awareness for love. And in our cultures, in our societies, with our teachers, with our clergy, with our our families and our family histories, we really knew at some level that if we behaved in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
We weren't necessarily going to get accepted for that. And so that pattern within so many people. I think I saw a video on YouTube. Neil Donald Walsh saying, he said 98% of the people are spending 98% of their time on things that don't matter to them at all.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's very true. And I think for someone like yourself, and I kind of found teaching, and I love to teach. You know, I found that really early on, and I think that means that, you know, the longer you're able to be in the work that you're born to do, the more mastery you have at it.
Yeah.
And so for me, teaching people the profiles is going to allow them to begin this process so much earlier in their life than waiting till they're 50 or 60 and mm-hmm. realizing, man, I don't have another 10 or 15 years to try something dumb. I've got to figure out who the heck I am and do what I really want to do, because I want to finish out my years enjoying my life rather than just working.
Yeah, you don't want to wait until you're like a Grandma Moses who starts painting at 80. I mean, come on.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's not
right.
a bad thing, mind you.
Get on with it, right?
Exactly. And I've often thought that too, is why can't we raise our children so that they're in touch with themselves, their intuition, and all that is really who they are on the inside, so that they can fulfill that life's purpose on the outside and be happy people. And I love, for example, I guess it's the country.
But there's only one way to do that.
Yes.
There's only one way to do that.
Yes. And it is?
The parents have to be able to be who they are.
Exactly.
So it makes it safe for the child to find themselves. If the parents are being somebody that they're supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
the child will feel like, well, who I am isn't enough. I've got to do that too.
Yeah. I have to say that my parents, and I can't credit them enough. Matter of fact, it was about a couple, 3 years ago when their last wills and testament were sent out to all the children, right? Now, they're still alive. They're still alive and kicking, doing well. I mean, they'll probably live to be 100. But they took care of this now, all right? And so we get I thought I'd only get one, but I got two, one from each of them, and that's just the way it's done. And so I'm reading through and seeing, okay, this is what's going to happen, and that's what's going to happen, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, wow, this is cool that they're, and they, my mom told me back when they were in their 30s or 40s, I think, you know, because we were asking the questions. Well, what do you guys want us to do, you know, when you guys pass? And they, you know, or one of you goes, don't worry about it. We're going to have it all taken care of. And they have. And they've taken care of everything so that if one of them needs long-term care, that's taken care of, and so on and so forth. And I found it so fascinating that my parents, you alluded to basically what they did. They gave me the freedom as I was growing up to, so to speak, leave the nest. Now, not permanently, mind you. I didn't leave until I was 21. But when I from the age of, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10, I was bicycling all over Phoenix, right? Matter of fact, I actually got into trouble a couple of times because I ventured a little outside the border that they gave me permission to. And it just so happens that they were driving through that area and saw me. And there was, of course, no way I was going to be able to hide. But they gave me that freedom to explore. And of course, I made some bad decisions on a couple of occasions where my exploration took precedent over family events, like my mother's graduating from college, and I thought it was more important to go and collect money from my paper route than to go see my mother graduate. And if there are regrets in life, that is probably the biggest one. But they still gave me that freedom to do all of these things. And we experienced death in our home. My grandmother on my mother's side passed away in our home. So we had those kinds of experiences. Where I'm leading here is in terms of as we grow older, certainly we lose acquaintances, family, friends, and so forth, husbands, wives, and even children for that matter. Sometimes children don't outlive their parents. But there is a connection. And honestly, I believe, based upon everything that you've said here on the program today, Reese, if we were in that place and that space of life's purpose with that different perspective, I honestly think that the trauma of others passing on, transitioning into the next realm, would take on a whole different dynamic than it does in our world today. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, that, you know, we have the mourning period and we're weeping and crying and carrying on. But you know how you hear about, oh, the memorial, and we're here to celebrate the life of. Well, why should that change? We should be celebrating the life we're living now, as well as celebrating. And I've often thought, how in the world can I escape the pain and the loss of mom and dad when they do eventually go? How do I? Is it something that I want to avoid? Is that what's going to help to build more character within me and keep me on purpose? Because they've taught me so much. As a matter of fact, that will and testament, there's nothing there that is greater than the things they have given me that I've already described to you in my life. There's no material thing they could give me that matches not just the life they've given me, but the things that they've taught me, the experiences that we've had together. And I find that just exhilarating, I have to tell you.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things, very subtly, there's actually, I worked with it this weekend with my people, is Harvard just finished a study, or not the finished study, but they've been in 75 years, they've been doing a study on happiness.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of this.
And what they found, and your parents are perfect examples of this, what they found was that happiness, long-term happiness, creates less Alzheimer's, less mental loss, less pain, less illness throughout the advancing ages of life. But the number one, and I'm also 56, and I'm very fortunate to have my mom still alive, but I did lose my father.
Mm-hmm.
And my father died young for our family. We tend to have a lot of longevity in my family. but he was very isolated in how he lived his life. And what they found was that isolation and loneliness kills.
Mm.
And they said they did all the studies of these people, both these Harvard grads who were obviously upper class, and then they had a control group, but the other half of the people in the study were these street kids that they got back in the 30s who had nothing, and they have been tracking these people for 75 years. And what they found was that the number one skill or the number one element in being happy was not blood cholesterol. It was not anything to do with family history or life or any of the types of things that doctors will test you for.
Mm-hmm.
It was whether they, in their 50s, whether they traded their business partner friends for playmates, and whether they found a partner, a spouse that was a soulmate for them, had a sense of being there for each other going forward. And of course, the earlier they had found that, the better they did. But at that point in their life, that factor above all else. So the quality of your relationships is the number one factor in all of the health and living out a healthy and happy life.
Wow, that's exciting. That gives me.
So your parents clearly have modeled that for you.
Yeah.
And this once again, someone who lives their purpose out and they found this purpose somehow within themselves, they give everyone else in the world permission to find their own way they're going to do it.
Mm.
But they also model a specific energy that works. And so there's a truth in what they're doing that's true for everyone. And yet it may not totally be how they did it. It may not be totally true for you. And yet there's a truth in their happiness and in the way they've survived and worked and supported each other and raised a family that by working together and being there for each other creates an awareness within you energetically that I need to find that within myself as well. And it wakes that up in you. So that's really the inspiration comes from you know, as we say, it's not just what you do, but who you bring to what you do.
Yeah. You know, I used to be a little embarrassed when people would get around the holidays, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and people would start talking about, I really don't want to go home because they have that. I mean, there have been movies made about the dysfunctional dynamic that goes on at the dinner table and in other places, right? And I sit there and I listen to these stories, these true stories from people, and I'm going, I don't have that. I mean, I'm not saying that it's Norman Rockwell painting of a Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner, but it ain't far off. And I have to tell you that I've had situations that have developed between myself and my other siblings throughout the years that we've resolved, and we don't have that stuff going on. And as I said, there were times when I would feel bad because I can't share my stories with you because they're not as dramatic and as crazy in one sense as what you've just described, because that's not where I come from. And someone said to me the other day when I shared that, they says, well, then you are in a unique position to be able to encourage and inspire people, that it is possible, even after 56 years of being associated with the same family. And they always say that you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. I, they're my friends, you know, and friends have disagreements.
And we did pick our family, but
sure. On a very higher level. Yes.
Energetically, depending upon your karma,
mm-hmm.
you choose a family and a life.
Yeah.
Style, you know, a moment to come into the world,
right?
Where sometimes you come in to be wounded horribly by your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your mission in life is to bring this positive message to the world, and so having an upbringing where you don't have to be the wounded healer. There's an archetype called the wounded healer, where the more wounded you are, And the more you survive, the more inspirational you are for other people.
Yeah.
But that isn't necessarily true for everyone. Sometimes mm-hmm. I did not have a violent or a you know, any sort of horrible childhood. I have very nice, you know, hardworking parents who were great role models for me. And everybody has their ups or downs or deficits and all, but it was very healthy, you know, childhood for me. And yet, running an energy medicine school, a high percentage of the people that come into the program have had very traumatic childhoods. And to understand that there's no, when you understand the life purpose, my life purpose wasn't to have that. My life purpose was to have this place where I could dream all the time. I didn't have to go into survival because I needed to start dreaming at 6, 7, 8 years old, 4, 5, 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and have that be sort of like the training that was happening in my life. Whereas, you know, people that have had much more violent circumstances or health issues or things like that, that have survived those then become their big why. Those become their message. And so for you to be able to, you know, show up every day and share a positive message, for people that there's something even more than they've dreamed of so far, and sharing the dream,
mm-hmm.
it has to come from a place where, you know, you've had that dream. You've been able to really embody that and master that dream for your lifetime. Yeah.
You know, you use the term where the term mastering. And you become an expert, you know, when you're in that, I call it, you're in the zone, so to speak, as they use the term in sports. And since I moved to Santa Barbara 10 years ago, I have been given an honorary doctorate, but it's not from any school. Somebody on one of the programs that I produced, and I don't even remember how it came about, they started calling me Dr. D, the audio physician. And it's kind of stuck, and I actually kind of like it. Now I'm running across more and more people who have actual PhDs, or who are preparing for their dissertation, and they're through these different universities here on the Central Coast. And I'm thinking, I wonder if is there a message in the universe? Is the universe trying to tell me that I should go after a PhD? And what I've come to the realization is, no, I don't have to. I've often found, I've heard this old saying that when you become an expert, then you die, because now you know it all. Exactly.
The world stops growing when you become an expert.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to go there.
Filtered through that limited screen.
Exactly.
But a master, on the other hand, that's what I love to teach this.
Yeah.
I can tell.
The
expert is someone who knows exactly how they're going to feel after... no matter what happens during life.
Yeah, yeah.
And they run everything through that filter of, I already know how I'm going to feel, and I already know how I'm going to manage my life, and I'm an expert at life. And so just because you have PhD behind your name doesn't mean you have any mastery at all.
This is true.
or a doctorate or whatever it is that you have. The mastery is really a factor of, they say 10,000 hours of practice makes the... just the initial step into mastery.
Mm.
So if you're going to master anything, you need 10,000 hours of practice, of diligent, focused practice on your skill. Now, what's really cool about being yourself is that if you ever figure out who you are, really at this profile level, and then practice that hour after hour, day after day, 10,000 hours isn't that long. You might be able to pull that off in 5, 6 years.
Yeah.
But realizing that we've spent 40 years being somebody that we aren't, mm-hmm. and diligently practicing the lie about who we are, means that we really need to get on this at some point. And to become a master, you're so comfortable with who you are, you're not thinking ahead anything. You're just waiting for life to sort of happen. You're going into situations and something comes up and you're like, oh, well, now this is the way I respond to this and connect with this. And so a master feels first and thinks second. An expert thinks first and feels what they thought they would feel.
Mm-hmm.
So the master is literally feeling the universe flowing through them, feeling their life purpose as it comes into the each moment. And this person comes to you, it's not like, oh, well, I don't like talking to this type of person. It's like, well, hey, this is the person that's come to me. Now, how is this my life purpose? And you practice that 10,000 hours or 20,000 hours, mm-hmm. and life becomes this flowing, enjoyable, empowering event rather than something that you judge and only limit yourself down to the things you're good at.
The best two words I can use to describe the difference between those two is the difference between surviving and thriving. And that's what this program's all about, is helping people to get to a place where they can thrive and absolutely enjoy the life that they are in. Discover your purpose, how to use the 5 life purpose profiles to unlock your hidden potential and live the life you were meant to live. Rhys Thomas, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And a reminder that they can get this book, Rhys, at discoveryourpurposebook.com. That's the place to get the book, but they can get more.
And or Amazon, but if you go to discoveryourpurposebook.com, you also get a bunch of video and things as well. So the best place to get it.
And then if they want to find out more about you and your school, your institute, RhysThomasInstitute.com. That's RHYS, RhysThomasInstitute.com, and we encourage people to check you out. You're also on Facebook and Twitter and a bunch of other places, and I always hate to have interviews like this come to an end, but hey, you know, we're dealing with a clock, and that's just the way it is. And I want to thank you so much. This has been been fun. It's been exhilarating, quite honestly, for me, and I hope for our listeners as well. And if you ever find yourself in the area of Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation.
Oh, I would love to. I'm definitely going to get out there. A lot of people have invited me out there, and I've got to get out there and do some book signings and have some fun, and I love Santa Barbara area, so
absolutely
I look forward to it.
And I just a reminder to our listeners that this interview is an hour and 15 minutes in length total time, so if you want to hear the entire interview as you're listening to this radio broadcast to wrap up, go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and the archives are right there. And we encourage you to listen to the entire interview. And many of our interviews run longer than the radio show itself. Lots of information. And we are also linked to the website of RhysThomasInstitute.com. Once again, thank you, Rhys. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until next time, love Talal.